X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop pop out from stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Inside the Cross MLL podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross, and I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside the Cross freelance contributor and MLL analyst.
We got a great show for you guys today. An excellent interview with Mr. Marcus Holman, number one, coming up. But first, let's jump into a weekend update here, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. So we had two games on the same weekend as the NCAA championship. Make of that what you will. Obviously, I think it's dumb. Chris?
Yeah, I'm fair with that. I'm fair. I can go with dumb. Also having it sandwiched with the draft, but we've mentioned the draft time before and having the games the day before the draft. It's a lot going on that weekend. I'll just say that. It's a lot going on.
It's a little too much. I agree. So for those two games, we're going to give you guys our take on those and give you a little update. So Rochester defeated Denver 16-15, thereby destroying our prediction that Denver would destroy Rochester. But one thing we didn't know at the time of last week's podcast, the Wolf was going to come back. Jordan Wolf. Chris, what's your most surprising result that happened in this game? The most surprising thing?
I was surprised by just, I mean, the score itself, because Denver's kind of been keeping people at a much lower sort of level. And Rochester hasn't really been exploding offensively, you know, obviously with Wolf being out. Like you mentioned, didn't know he was coming back and can definitely weren't sure that he was going to contribute at the level he did. You know, you think sometimes you come back from an injury, you're going to be a little cautious. He was not at all cautious, jumped right back in. Same Jordan Wolf, same style, and it worked.
I mean, doesn't he always torch the Outlaws? He had 10 points against them last year. Like, what did they not learn their lesson? What happened?
No.
No, they didn't learn their lesson. All right. Yeah.
I think, you know what? Here's what happened. I think they learned a lesson, and I think he just had to teach them new lessons. Because, you know, they switched up their strategies. It's not like they didn't try, but just whatever answers they had, he just had better questions, and that's what happens.
So my surprising result or stat line from this game, Denver had a 7-goal second quarter and still lost. Like absolutely dominant quarter over the Rattlers and still dropped it, even though they had all the momentum going into halftime. That's crazy.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense. Watching it, you know, you just kept seeing them chipping away and chipping away. And a lot of these goals, they were pouring in unassisted goals, you know, just kind of beating individual matchups. But Rochester just didn't give up. I will definitely say that for the Rattlers. This team does not give up.
One of the other things about this game, Mike Manley making his debut this season, former Defensive Player of the Year twice for the Rattlers. How did you think he played in the game?
I think he played well. I think he's still figuring out where to take his shots offensively, which that's something I can see kind of taking a little bit of time, you know? I mean, he has a strong defensive game, but he also has a lot of offensive transition kind of play. He got caught in a couple situations where, you know, he's bringing the ball over, and then it's like, okay, well, what do I do now? Or, you know, am I going to go to the goal? Am I going to pull up for two? That seems more like once you get your legs back under you, once you get your reps going, that sort of thing will come around. So, I mean, we'll see. Hopefully he's back in the lineup consistently from here on out.
Yeah, the Leopard can't change his stripes, man. He's always going to be fast going up the field. And if he gets caught, it's going to be tough getting back. He's like a Mack truck, just doesn't have reverse. He's going straight to the cooker every chance he gets. Any other thoughts on Rochester? I would say upsetting the previously undefeated Denver Outlaws in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say upsetting. It just been 12 games in a row. I didn't see them putting up the 16. You know, Wolf or no Wolf, I'm surprised they put up the 16. So, you know, sorry we bet against you, Rattlers.
They probably listen to the podcast. I know Marilyn thinks I hate them because I said something about wanting to laugh in Dan's face if they lost at Gillette. That was played in the locker room for them. So, but hey, listen, it's not the first time I've gotten on a team's bad side. It won't be the last. Next update we have for you guys, Ohio 19, Florida Launch 7. Why would you watch this game?
You like watching the Ohio Machine scoring goals.
You want to see Tommy Shrives back, right?
Yes. Yes. You were in luck if that's why you were paying attention to that game. Because there was a lot of goals.
Yeah. He had a one goal, five assist performance. The thing that stood out for me, Florida being outshot, this is a comical number, even in MLL terms, 60-34. What? I mean, I get how that happens. But if you look, like, you would think that there was a dominant performance at a faceoff X, or there's a lot of great possessions. The faceoffs were even. Pretty much even.
Split them down the middle.
Yeah. So, I mean, how did this happen? How did that disparity happen? How outclassed was this Florida team, which we'll get to this, is going to look totally different maybe as soon as this week?
Oh, yeah. You know what I was thinking when I watched this game? I was thinking, so Ohio was playing like the game didn't count, but in a good way. You know what I mean? Like totally loose. You know, I mean, Schreiber came in and just shot a behind the back pass over, you know, right onto the crease. Just like, you know, perfect. You know, like when you're playing, you know, just hanging out at the school with your friends. You know, there's a different sort of looseness to the game. That's what they were playing. Florida was also playing like the game didn't count, but if you say it in a bad way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're not – I mean, they just kept, like, jamming passes towards the crease that just weren't happening, like unforced turnovers. It was not a good Florida performance. I don't know – exactly what to attribute that performance to, because I mean they've been doing fine, but you know, honestly, maybe they just kind of, once you start seeing the goals pile up, maybe it takes some of the wind out of your sails or something like that. But it was very good by one team and very bad by another.
One of the surprising starts in this game goes to Kyle Bernlohr, former Terps keeper, made his first start ever for Ohio in cage. Scotty Raj, a possible selection for Lax draft last week, did not play in this game, but was there, was suited up. What did you think of Bernlohr's debut?
Bernlohr did really well. He cleaned things up nicely. You know what I mean? Didn't give a lot of opportunities, not a lot of second chances. He had some really great plays where, like, you know, Chaz Woodson went for a reverse dunk, and, you know, he just met him and shut him down. Kieran McArdle, another guy who was back. You know, we mentioned Schreiber being back. McArdle was back as well. He played well, but he was another person who got stuffed on the crease. Bernlohr was he was fearless in there, and he's just been playing really well. I was surprised to see him start. You know, I don't know exactly why they went with that decision, but, you know, he did well. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought he did really well as well. I think, you know, anytime you stuff the Terminator, you're kind of asking for, like, Skynet to come get you. But unfortunately, that's not happening for Florida until they get this entire draft class in there. What percentage of the Florida roster in that game is going to be there at the end of the season? What do you think? Give me a percentage of that roster. How much of that is going to be the same people wearing yellow, blue, and white?
Let's see. I'm going to say it's definitely below 50%. Let's say 35%.
That's great. I was going to go with 30. So we'll split the difference at 35. That's good. I'm with you. That's fair. Yeah, Florida goes through these periods of resurgence and sometimes pulls upsets, usually not at this part of the season. Their two wins, I felt, are hard-fought wins. Yes, one of them came last, you know, in the last week at the hands of maybe the worst Rochester Rattlers performance. I actually talked to Coach Sudan at the draft, and that's pretty much what he said. It was one of the worst games that he's ever seen at the professional level. But you know, some that happens and you take advantage of it. And if you can win, you go for the win every time. That's why you play the game. So yeah, I think going forward, Florida is going to be a totally different team. I would expect not to see perhaps this lopsided of a loss. I mean, they got more than doubled up here by Ohio, but at the same time, like, you're going to have to wait for all these rookies to adjust. And I mean, he could dress the entire draft class, and I feel like his team's better. Like, Mariano's team is better if he dresses everybody that he drafted.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, in the same regard, like, they haven't been a get-doubled-up team, you know? Like, I'm going to say more often than not, Ohio is going to beat Florida, you know, in their current lineups and everything like that.
Right.
But they're not the Washington Generals, you know what I mean? Like, this was something that I don't think we should expect to see in the future, you know, just getting steamrolled like this. But, you know, a loss does seem reasonable in this one.
Yeah, it's a team that cares now and knows that they have to play a certain way to win. And if they don't play that way, they can't win. But they also don't, you know, pack it in and give up. Like, let's be honest, some Florida teams have done that. I'm not, you know, I don't think I've seen it this year. And I don't think they actually gave up in this game, even though they got, you know, shellacked here. But you know, Florida is not a gimme win anymore. And, I think, you know, if you're an MLO fan that's new, or you're a fan of the launch and you're excited to see this team and you're pissed they traded Lyle. I mean, you're about to get a guy in Dylan Malloy and the rest of this draft class that's going to completely change your franchise, just like Lyle and Miles did. So with that in mind, we're going to move on to our next segment, which we kind of did this last week, but it actually happened. Instead of our mock, we're going to go up with the MLL draft. And my question for you, Chris Rosenthal, who won the day?
You know, it's funny. We were just talking about these guys. I really feel like Florida might have won this thing.
I don't disagree. I gave them an A in my draft grades, which were remarkably generous this year. I'm sorry if you open that piece and expect to read all the hatred. I just feel like everybody did well. This is a good draft class, and I don't think anybody screwed up too bad. I think certain teams should have done better, but I don't know. I mean, what was the most surprising pick or move that a team made for you in the draft?
Well, I mean, just watching the draft, I have to say I was surprised at the time that Denver kind of dropped off a few picks for the sake of moving up three spots in the first round. That caught me off guard at the time. And I was like, they have to really, really love who they're going to take. You know, because, I mean, they went from 9 to 6. So,
right.
You know, you gotta really love who they picked up. And, you know, they grabbed Zach Currier. So, okay, you know, I understand that. This he seems like somebody who could fit very well with that Denver squad. So, you know, I understand why they did it. I do have to say, though, it totally shocked me at the time when they were willing to exchange so much for such a small jump.
Yeah, absolutely. In the moment when the trade got announced, I was at the draft at Toby Keith's bar with no windows. And let me tell you, the place was like buzzing, and I knew a trade was coming, and I tweeted something out like, a trade is coming, and then it happened, and I was like, oh, wow, all right, cool. And I saw what they gave up, and I kind of balked at it. But you have to remember, Denver had two picks at the end of the second round, and they probably didn't like anyone else in those spots. I feel like they went into this draft with specific wants. And, you know, I talked to, you know, their personnel. I talked to Coach BJ O'Hara, and I think that they went into this draft looking for very specific things. And Currier was not something that he and I talked about, but we definitely talked about Larkin Kemp. And the only reason Kemp fell as far as he did was that he is taking a job with Disney in California, and Denver's the only team that makes sense to fly him in and out because he's going to be a West Coaster. So if you're a West Coaster and you play, you know, in the MLL, you're basically going to Denver. And I think a lot of teams just kind of gave up on that notion, even though Kemp, I think, is a complete impact player. He's one of those guys that makes Denver better, which is scary. And by the way, so does Courier, because Courier gives them what they used to be, which is a transition heavy team, not just a team that can score on a break, but a team that can stop you from scoring on a break and also score right off the wing on the faceoff, and have the faceoff guys stay in and be an impact player. And that's what Courier gives you. I mean, it's not about him winning the draw. It's about him getting the ball after the wing wins the draw and sticking a G. And that's the kind of guy that, you know, Denver loves and Denver needs to try and get better here in 2017 versus last year. So with that in mind, which player do you think will have the most impact for the team that drafted them?
That is a really good question. I'm going to say, if it's not cheating to say someone who was picked very high, like, you know, somebody very early picked, I really think Jake Furcaro could play a big role for Chesapeake. And the reason why I say that is they've definitely felt the need to have someone kind of offsetting the Miles Jones attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they can, you know, obviously it's based on the assumption that Furcaro can hop onto the first line. But if they can get someone like Furcaro who just takes some of the weight off of Jones's shoulders. And the thing I particularly liked about Furcaro, he's got range, like, for days on that shot. So they could find themselves in a situation like similar to last year where they would have, you know, they'd have Walters hanging out on the arc and he could kick it over to Jones for two. They can replay that same sort of situation this year with Jones hanging out on the arc, kicking it up to Furcaro, or vice versa, because, you know, Miles Jones loves shooting from distance as well. So I think, you know, I think he could definitely be somebody who contributes in a major way for that franchise. Same question back to you. Who'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't my answer, but to kind of carry on and piggyback on your theme of the Bayhawks here, Colin Heacock alongside Miles Jones with Furcaro next to them. Like, that midfield line might not sound like a really great midfield line, but matchup-wise, it's insane because Heacock is huge. He is huge. And Furcaro is great off-ball. He had to work all season against some of the best poles to just get open, not even dodge with the ball. So I think Heacock as well as Furcaro, if they can get on line with Jones, I mean, that's scary. That's a crazy lineup there. I mean, the talk of the draft before it happened was, what if Chesapeake got Perkovic and then put Perkovic next to Jones? And that's scary. But I think Heacock is actually more versatile and can dodge from anywhere on the field. And also will, you know, could maybe get a pull away from Jones, or if not, play big, big picks behind the cage and free one of them up, because they're both, you know, I think Jones probably has to get a little better at this because he's most used to playing above GLE. But I think that if they can both get used to inverting a little bit, I mean, that's a scary proposition for any team to handle. As far as which player will have the most impact right away, I mean, it's Dylan Loy. It's such a, like, pat answer, and I'll get to, like, a different answer later on when we talk about, like, sleepers or whatever. But, like, Dylan Loy was the best player in college lacrosse for at least 2 years, and then he broke his foot, and he came back, and he had a whole new coach that tried to, you know, everyone said that Brown would play the same system. You're full of crap. They played a different system. I watched both teams very intently. Last season, the season before that, and this season, completely different setup. Defense was not organized. They couldn't stop anybody. Goaltender was not seasoned. You know, Dylan had to do a lot himself to get open. He was playing with two freshmen on the attack line. You know, if you paid attention, you saw that and still saw that Dylan Loy had a great season and is going to have a great MLL career, I believe, if he sticks with it. He's a big boy. I don't think that he relies on it as much as people think. Hopefully he knows that he has to stay in shape the whole time when he gets in the league, and then he can really be an impact attackman, like right at the top level. I think he's a top 10 guy right now without playing a game. And I think if you get a guy like that with the first pick, you did a great job, because you could have messed that up. Could have messed that pick up. I actually don't think there was any other choice for number one, even though everybody else thought it would be Rambo, you know, thought it would be Cannizzaro at one point. Even me, I actually thought it would be Cannizzaro at one point. But as this NCAA season goes on, I think this is the one thing, you know, that we gain from the draft being a little later, is we gain a little bit more perspective. Whereas I don't think Malloy's position would have changed in January to now. I don't think there's a lot of other guys that went in the second and first rounds that you could say that about. So for me, the biggest impact guy, you know, is Dylan Malloy.
Yeah, I think he definitely definitely could be. And he's definitely going to be in a position to be that guy there. It's going to be really, really cool to see him playing alongside Kieran McArdle. That just seems like a lot of destruction. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Both of those two are sandwiching the defense on either side. I'm looking forward to seeing Malloy suit up. And I don't know what they're going to do as far as the third attackman goes. They've got a lot of options now. So, I mean, a good problem to have, but we'll see. But having, you know, bookended with Malloy and McArdle sounds like a very difficult prospect for teams to focus on.
I mean, they drafted your guy Drenner too. So, I mean, that's a great starting. I mean, listen, I'm going to call right now. My new nickname for the Florida launch is Skynet, because they're led they're led by the Terminator. They got a little bit of a future theme there. You know, a little NASA action going on, a little T-800 with the T-1000 now. I think we're getting a team up here, and I think it's going to be great. So moving forward,
I like it.
Definitely a team to watch, the Florida Skynets. So switching to, you know, the negative aspect a little bit, which team had the worst draft, do you think?
Oh, you know, it breaks my heart to have to pick one, but this is the life we have chosen. I gotta say, I was personally very confused about the approach that Atlanta took in their drafting.
Yeah.
Now, I know they had the one pick early, and then they had to kind of hang out a little bit. And especially with that in mind, not to get like a – and also in a very midfield shallow draft.
Yeah.
Not to do whatever they could to grab one kind of, I guess, game-changing, one kind of offense-heavy, sort of nose-for-the-goal kind of midfielder right off the bat was very confusing to me. I got to say the Blaze. Jake Withers, I mean, you know, obviously very talented face-off guy, and, you know, they're big fans of Jake Withers. But I mean, you know, and I guess you got to reach to get him if you want him there, but it just seemed like they really should have grabbed somebody else to help hold down that midfield.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a ton of guys left at that point, but at the same time, you know, they could have taken any number of midfielders or even tried to convert an attackman there, and they didn't. I think the Blazers problem is the Blazers problem that I always think it is, which is way too many two-way guys and too many Canadians that are attackmen trying to play midfield, and too many attackmen that are American being converted into midfielders. It doesn't make any sense, that approach. I think they need to package some guys and make some moves, and they're going to stay at the bottom of the league, man. I hate to say it. They really do have a lot of talent. I just don't think they have the right combination of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just, they need to make some moves before the trade deadline and kind of balance out. I think they're just way too reliant on two-way guys getting back in transition, and it's not even helping. Like, it's not even helping. Like, you have that team, and that's the one thing you should stop, and you can't stop it. You know?
Right. Yeah, they're the way that their lineup's kind of constructed right now, just think about it like this. So when Kevin Rice does come back, and, you know, assuming nobody else gets, you know, moved or cut or anything like that, so you're going to have Rice, Dylan Donahue, Randy Stotts perhaps at that point, Mark Matthews, perhaps at that point, Chris Bocklet, James Pinnell, You know, I mean, that's a lot of guys who play attack. You know, yeah. If they move Pinnell back to midfield, they'll get a little bit of a range there. But, you know, he is an attackman playing there now. So it seems like they got a whole lot of attack, not so much on the midfield. And so, you know, I don't know what they could have done, but I feel like they definitely should have grabbed someone before grabbing Withers, Eppel, and Bergdorf. You know, we'll see. Do you echo that, Atlanta, or do you have another team that stood out to you?
For me, it's hard because you look at who actually, you know, where the picks were, right? That's a big part of it. So if you blew an early pick, which I don't think anyone necessarily blew an early pick here, and I think that's why my draft grades are actually really nice for the most part. But I feel like teams that pick guys up at late spots that might not even play. I mean, I hate to say it, but like Rochester's probably in there because we don't know if Eric Fennell is going to play or if he's just going to go play NLL. And the same thing for Zeb Williams. And we know Zeb Williams is, you know, getting into law enforcement in the state of New York. So how much free time is he going to have? We've seen how that has affected Mike Manley right now, who just made his debut. I don't know if the Rattlers could have done a better job. I feel like they could have packaged and traded up, which I know that's what they wanted to do. Maybe just no one wanted to deal with them. But, you know, for a team to try and get better, I feel like if those guys play, they got better. But there's a big chance neither one of those guys suits up for the Rattlers. You know, that's a risk. And drafts are risks. They're built on risks. Another team I think that kind of took that risk as well, but flipped it and only got guys they wanted or needed at a position that they are very thin at is New York. So I kind of like what they did. They got Scotty Furman in the fifth round is a steal. Do you agree?
Yes.
Maybe one of the steals of the draft.
Yeah, he played this full season as the guy, you know, anchoring that defense, you know. Number one assignments for him. So, yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of potential. A lot of people are very high on him. I'm surprised he hung around that long.
Yeah, I think some people projected him as an LSM or a D-mid because he's not upper body-wise. He's not huge. Like for example, let's compare him to the guy they picked. Austin Pafani is just a supernatural man beast. He's like a Wendigo, right, where, you know, playing lacrosse. So I don't know. I mean, the Lizards defense, and I said this to start my preview of them and their drafts, was their defense stinks. So if they get two guys like Pafani and Furman, they're at least not going to stink as bad. And I think those guys slot in right away as long as they're ready to play. I don't know if Furman's still banged up or whatever, but those two guys pop right in and make the Lizards better. And they didn't even pick until like much later in the draft. They did not have a first round pick. They didn't even have – I don't even think they had a third-round pick. I mean, you know, for what they did it well. They did a good job of what they did. Actually, sorry, they did have a second-round pick. That's when they picked Pafani. But they didn't have a pick till 14, and then they didn't pick again until the fifth round. So to get those two guys, it's a huge get. It's a huge move. I think they did really well. What was your favorite pick of the draft?
Favorite pick of the draft, I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to go back to Florida on this one. I really liked where they got Alec Tullett.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, maybe some teams were concerned because he is he's a Toronto guy. I'm not sure where he's going to be spending the rest of this summer. But so he's a Toronto guy. So I can understand, you know, there still is, you know, some kind of concern about, you know, getting these guys down there and, you know, making them see if they can get to practices and what they're going to be doing. But grabbing him where they did seemed like a really good catch for me, especially because I know Florida defensively wanted someone who could, like, cue up a transition game, somebody who could, you know, get the ball on the ground and get things moving quickly to the offensive side. And if you can't get Larkin Kemp, then Tullett's a pretty good substitute. You know, they have that sort of style in them. They've been running, they've been controlling the ball. So, I mean, yeah, they grabbed him where they did. It seemed like a really smart play.
Yeah, I totally echo that. One of the best parts about covering Brown the last like 3 years was you would watch Tollett and Kemp warm up on the sideline. I've told this story a bunch of times. And all they do is like these little silly, like no look, one handed between the legs scoops, like all the way around the world, like behind the backs, double behind the backs, fake behind the backs. And they just did that before games. That was like how they warmed up. They'd like throw little grounders at each other. They'd skip them off the ground, bounce passes, all that stuff. So, you know, people think that Tollett maybe doesn't have the same kind of stick skills as Kemp. I would say that you are incorrect if you think that. I think they're actually very similar. And Tollett can also play a little LSM. So I wouldn't, you know, put off seeing him moonlight a little bit for the Florida Skynets. I think for me, my favorite pick, you know, I didn't kill him for it at the time, but I kind of feel like I got to kill him for it now, is Mariano taking his brother at 4. I think we both know why. We know that Ohio was going to take him if he didn't take him, right? Like, we know that.
Yeah. Yes. I feel very comfortable saying that.
So I can't bust him too bad, but the fact that I busted Tucker for taking his kid a couple years ago means I can't let Mariano slide here either. I'm sorry. I can't be a hypocrite in that way. I just can't do it. That being said, that's just a little thing I had to put out there. I think if anybody was going to draft Isaiah Davis Allen and make an ML player out of him, it'd be Chesapeake, because he's basically the understudy to Matt Abbott. Right?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
I think they have similar games, but I don't. I think they're both not D-mids. You know, I don't think either one of them is particularly great at playing one-on-one defense. I don't. But everything else they do, every intangible you can measure in lacrosse for both those players is off the charts. Right?
Right. It's almost like they need a different name for what they do. You know what I mean? Because, like, they are defensive in the sense that, you know, yes, that is when they will come onto the field. But, like, yeah, you're not selecting Isaiah Davis Allen there because you need somebody to shut down, you know, a midfielder from the other team who's doing really well.
Right. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Best sleeper. Go.
Best sleeper. Let me see here. So now when we're talking sleeper, we're talking somebody who may or may not show up on the roster. Like, we're talking deep.
Deep. Real deep. Like REM sleep.
Okay. Like third inception level.
Yeah, like you're having a lucid dream.
All right, let's see here.
Tom Hardy shows up, tells you to dream bigger. That kind of sleeper.
Man. All right. Okay. Good sleeper. I was, you know, somebody who I was kind of, I have a list here of guys, you know, when I was going over this whole draft, mock draft and everything, guys I expected to go second to last or last round. You know what I mean? Usually like neighborhood ties and things like that.
Yeah.
So I was pleasantly surprised when Denver selected Matt Florence, the middie out of Penn State. I think he was their second to last pick, actually. He's a Colorado guy, but he also kind of fits. Denver seemed to have like a grocery list sort of thing, you know, in this draft. Like, we need guys who can fit into this system because we're going to be running this system. And everybody's just going to be running in Denver. And so a guy like Matt Florence, who, you know, is obviously not, you know, 30-goal, 30-assist kind of guy, but see him go off the board, I was like, okay, if this guy, you know, if he's not just local practice squad, if he, you know, if he gets a go at it, we might see him, you know, doing some two-way, you know, queuing up the offense. You know, we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, sleeper, but we'll see.
I got to give you mine, and I met him last summer. He's a very impressive young man. Wow, the thunder just cracked right before I said his name. So you know he's dope. JD, the Rancor Recor from Marist. He is slight but fleet of foot. Great finisher around the cage. Excellent initiator. I don't know how he fits in with the Lizards, but if someone gets hurt and he gets a shot to actually play X, like if something happens to Pinnell, I'm not saying something's going to happen to him. I'm not saying someone's going to take care of him. But
right.
If JD gets a shot, you know, for a 9th-round pick, it's one hell of a bargain. Love his game. Better person than he is a lacrosse player, which I don't say very often. So hope he gets a shot. And with that, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm just blown away that the Thunder came down from the sky right before his name.
I mean, you called down the Thunder, right?
That's amazing.
You called down the Thunder. Well, here we are. Moving along, we have a very special guest for you guys. We are bringing on Marcus Holman of the Ohio Machine right now. We welcome now to the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast, number one in your hearts and on the field, Marcus Holman. Marcus Holman, how are we doing?
Wow, that is a very generous introduction there. I appreciate that, Kyle. Number one in your heart.
That's right. We appreciate versatility here on the MLL podcast. So I'm going to kick it off. We got Chris Rosenthal here as well. Here's my question I want to ask everyone in the league. Pretend we're fans that are new to MLL. Get us up to speed and sell us on rooting, not just for the league, but for the Ohio Machine.
Wow, I like it. Coming out of the gates there with an awesome question. Well, I think to start, you know, after watching a great weekend of college lacrosse, you know, I think there were some times Monday in the championship where people felt like the game needed to be sped up a little bit. And, you know, I feel like the topic of a shot clock comes up year after year at Final Four weekend. And I can certainly tell you that if you attend a Major League Lacrosse game, you will see no shortage of transition, two-point shots, and lots of possessions for both teams because we have a 60-second shot clock that is visible to everyone in the stands, which is a nice change up from the invisible collegiate shot clock that's going on right now. The next selling point I would say is just the overall athleticism of all the players, top to bottom, you know, attack, midfield, defense, and goalies as well. You know, I think we're at a point right now in lacrosse where post-college guys are finding that they can make a living through the game, whether that's, you know, having a personal brand, you know, guys like Scott Rogers and Joe Walters, you know, Paul Rabel, Kyle Harrison, those guys, or guys like myself that are coaching at the collegiate level and playing as well. So, and why I say that is because guys are really committed to the game at a level that they never have been before. And what that leads to is a better product on the field for our audience. So the skill level is absolutely tremendous. The checks are harder, the saves are better. You know, the shots are coming 100 to 110 miles an hour, and it's really an exciting product, not only to be a part of, but to watch as well, because, you know, I'm a fan of the league and the talent that we have. Now to wind down my long-winded answer here, why you should watch the Ohio Machine. Well, I think, you know, we boast maybe the most complete team. Our defense is really fun to watch. You know, I know that we have maybe some bigger names on the offensive side of the ball, but the way that our defense, you know, handles their individual matchups, from starting with our short stick defensive midfielders, you know, Dominique Alexander, you know, a rookie by the name of Mike Burney has really done a nice job for us. And then the way that our long sticks slide and recover and they communicate really well. Another young defenseman we have who's playing very well for us right now is a kid by the name of Matt McMahon. He's a lefty defender from Penn. You know, and I think they're giving up the least amount of goals in the league, if I'm correct. So I'll sell you on our defense if you want to, you know, if you're a defensive guy and you'd like to see a slide and recover defense, you should check us out.
Wow. Offensive guy selling on the defense. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. Definitely not. Chris, what's your question for Marcus?
Okay, you know, you were just talking about, you know, the past weekend, the college games and everything like that. You guys had a game of your own, but I'm sure you were still paying a lot of attention to the Machine's draft picks. What were your thoughts on the draft and just how you guys did?
Yeah, I think a very exciting draft for us. You know, there have been a lot of conversations about our game plan going into it. You know, I think that the role that we needed to fill after losing a guy like Steel Stanwyck that had been a cornerstone of this franchise for the past 5 years as an ex attackman and a ball carrier, I think that was an immediate need for us. And you know, so we made moves obviously to bump up and get Connor Cannizzaro, which I think, you know, fits our offense perfectly. Obviously, you know, you never really know with a draft choice, right, until they're, you know, 5 or 6 games into their career and they've started performing. But I think that Connor is a kid that, from what I've heard about him and, you know, just texting with him the other day, he seems really excited to continue to play lacrosse after college. And, you know, it certainly runs in his family blood. His sister Kara was a stud midfielder at the University of North Carolina. We were the same age. And I just think he fits what we're looking for and a need that we need to fulfill on the offensive end for us. And then, you know, adding a guy like Nick Fields as well, who's you know, an athletic defenseman. He you know, he's a guy obviously playing under Coach Petromala for 4 years. You know, I think those kids develop an IQ for the defensive side of the ball, maybe better than anyone else. And a couple other guys that, you know, maybe can contribute later in the season, or if not this year, then into next year as well.
So you're a Tar Heel from Maryland. Did you root for or against the Terps this past weekend?
Good question. It is a bit of a conflict of interest. You know, I'm playing in Columbus for the past, you know, this is my 5th season in the league. You have to learn, I think, to appreciate Buckeye Nation and, you know, the pride that they have in their university. And, you know, Ohio State really is the king of Columbus. So, truthfully, rooming with Logan Shush, I tweeted out a video of him celebrating on Saturday after they had beaten Towson in the Final Four game. I was on board for the Buckeyes. I think him and Dominique Alexander wouldn't let me live it down if I wasn't rooting for their team. But you know, then there's kind of the opposite side of it that you know, I've played with many Terps over my career, and those guys are just as passionate about their team and their program as well. So you know, I was truthfully just happy that it was two teams that, you know, we're going to see a new champion, which I think is always fun for any casual viewer. And there were good storylines on both sides of it. And truthfully, I think the best team won. I think Maryland was, you know, top to bottom, just really, really buttoned up. And you know, congrats to Coach Tillman for kind of pulling through there. I think, you know, he was 0-4 in national championships prior to that. So, you know, congrats to Terp Nation. And, you know, I guess they have the right to celebrate all summer.
Now, you mentioned some of your teammates there a minute ago. Now, so here's a question for you. Who, and you can answer yourself. If the answer is yourself, feel free. But who is the funniest member of the Ohio Machine?
The funniest member? Dominique Alexander, you know, he's a funny dude. He makes me laugh. I don't know if he's actually funny though, as much as it is him just constantly running his mouth and chirping people. So maybe it's more like we're laughing at Neek, not with him. If I have to say the funniest, Kyle Harrison is constantly making me laugh with just like his mannerisms and how he is and like just the way that he, I don't know. He's just a super, super goofy guy, I guess, once you get behind the shell of K-18. So he's – Kyle's constantly making me laugh, whether it's like a text or he'll shoot me over like a rap lyric or something like that. I don't even know what it is, but he's a pleasure to be around for sure.
Following in that vein, what is the worst song that is played in the locker room? You don't have to say who chose it, but you have to say which song is the worst in the machine locker room.
Ooh. Which song is the worst? So I have to say I'm DJing about 90% of the time. The speaker system's right by my locker room, by my locker in our locker room. So if you ask me, you know, I've never put on a bad song in my DJing career. So sometimes Scotty Roger will hop on the mic. He's got a solid collection of songs as well. He likes, you know, he's a hard rap guy. ASAP Rocky, you know, Yo Gotti, Gucci Mane. He's into the kind of deep rap. But I think I don't know if there's a worse song. I like to put on you know, some funk sometimes, some like 70s funk. I don't know if guys really vibe to that. You know, play that funky music is on every now and then. I don't think that's a bad song. I just think that's kind of a random one. So that would be my answer.
Yeah, by all means, that's definitely not a bad song. so now let's kind of stick with the teammates thing, but put it back on the field. So this past weekend, Tom Schreiber comes back and joins the lineup. What was it like having him back in as opposed to the games earlier in the season?
Yeah, well, anytime you can, you know, get a reigning MVP back in your lineup, I think your team is automatically boosted. You know, Tom does so many things, obviously, with the ball on his stick, his ability to feed and his vision and the way that he thinks, you know, 3-4 seconds ahead is second to none in the league. And I think, you know, if you get to know Tom, he's definitely a guy that has worked his way there. You know, he takes a lot of pride in his work ethic. And, you know, I remember him always talking about how, you know, you have to find your edge as a competitor. And, you know, no matter whether that's in the weight room or if it's in your backyard shooting lacrosse balls or if it's, you know, running sprints, you got to find that edge and that'll translate onto the field on game day. So kind of, you know, getting around the question a little bit. But, yeah, having Tom back was great. Obviously, I talked about what he does with the ball, but also without the ball. You know, he's a very smart player. He's been playing the game his whole life. His dad's a coach. So he knows how to move in space without the ball and clear through and set picks, which, you know, again, that doesn't necessarily jump off the stat sheet because you can't, there are no stats for setting picks or having a good clear through or a good cut. But, you know, Tom really does all those things as a complete lacrosse player. And he's a guy that just makes everyone around him better. So, yeah, you know, it was good having him back. He obviously has not lost a step, as you can see by his, I think, 1 goal, 5 assist performance. And I think his, you know, his stick is as sharp as it will ever be, you know, coming off an indoor season where he put up, you know, monstrous numbers. So we're glad to have him back and on the offensive side of the ball for us.
We're gonna get you out of here real quick. One more from me, kind of a building on that last question. Logan Schuss is back for you guys after what a 2-season absence from the machine. Kind of talk about what he does for you guys on that right side shooting lefty.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think I got to touch on the what he does for us off the field. You know, Logan's a great locker room guy. Again, you know, a Buckeye through and through, so he's familiar with Columbus and you know, I think he just brings a lot of juice to our team with the way he approaches lacrosse and just the type of person he is. So, you know, we've become really good friends. I guess you could say there's a little bit of a bromance there in our first 2 seasons playing together. And it's been great to have him back just contributing in the locker room. And then on the field, you know, again, he's Logan's a playmaker. You know, he knows where to be. He knows – how to finish shots. Again, you talk about that kind of Canadian, you know, confidence, if you will, guys that aren't afraid to step up and you know, make a big play if they're needed. So he's been great for us. You know, he can shoot the ball like, you know, nobody I've ever seen. He really just lets it sling from that left side. I think he actually had a right-handed goal this past weekend, which I was busting his chops with it with him about that a little bit, because I'm still waiting on my first lefty goal. I think it's been a couple seasons now, but who's counting? So yeah, it's been great to have Logan back, and he's certainly a part of this team moving forward.
Yeah, he's got two righty ones this year, I think. So. Changing it up a little bit.
I know, seriously.
So I want to ask you this one. This is obviously a very important question here. What is your go-to order at Chipotle or your own favorite burrito spot?
Ooh, great question. So I'm a Chipotle guy for sure. I think Qdoba is an acceptable change-up because of the queso. Obviously that, you know, that can make or break some guys' days, but I'm a Chipotle guy. Truthfully, been getting more bowls lately than burritos, you know, summertime trying to watch the figure. Obviously we're in season now. So, you know, I'll get a bowl, some brown rice. I'll get pinto beans, veggies. And then I go half chicken, half barbacoa. Mild salsa, I'll get the corn, and I'll get maybe a little bit of sour cream, some lettuce, and the salad dressing with that. No guac for me. Nice. But that's usually the order for me at Chipotle.
I'm not going to lie to you, no guac is kind of sacrilege, but I respect it. All right, that kind of brings our interview with Marcus Holman of the Ohio Machine to a natural conclusion here. You can catch Marcus Holman and the Machine as they play Chesapeake this Friday, June 2nd at 7:30, Navy Marine Corps Stadium, only on LAC Sports Network. Marcus, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Always good talking, and you know, I really appreciate what you guys do for the league. You know, continue working hard and pushing our product out there to lacrosse fans across the country. It's much appreciated. Thanks, guys.
All right, everybody, that was Marcus Holman. Marcus, if you're listening to this, thanks for joining us and making it easy for other people to hopefully accept our invitation next time. We are going to bring this in for one of our most important segments, our LaxDraft.com picks of the week. You know what? I'm going to have you go first this time because I want you to explain to me these picks.
Okay. Well, let me bring up my LaxDraft list here so I see who I – okay, first and foremost, I got Paul Rabil.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, just first of all, you know, it's Paul Rabil. He's pretty good. I don't think it's going out too far on a limb to say, yeah, if I got a fantasy team, I have the opportunity. Yeah, okay, toss Paul Rabil on the list. So that just kind of seemed like a no-brainer for me.
I wonder if players lose points for getting stuck on offense or getting stuck on defense if they're offensive players. Probably not, right?
I hope not.
Well, they should.
I need to check the rules.
They should. And New York is letting that happen with Rabil and Walters way too much, which is a point I will continue to harp on until it is fixed. But continue.
Now, so for my second pick, I went with Matt Bocklet of your Denver Outlaws. I know Scott Ratliff was an option here, and he definitely, you know, has potential for scoring goals and assists, more so than Matt Bocklet, I would assume. But Matt Bocklet has been playing very well with the ground ball game, so I'm hoping that continues this weekend as well. He had 8 ground balls last weekend, so if he does something like that again, I'll be pretty happy with it.
He's doing great at getting people suspended, too.
Also true. Also absolutely true.
I just can't believe you left the number one son from the ATL on the board there with number two.
Well, I mean, he'll be back on my squad another time, I'm sure.
He's got his own t-shirt, dog. It launched today. It's a Scott Ratliff Tilt t-shirt. You can go buy it right now. And it's awesome. It's like him diving straight in the Superman pose. That's actually a photo of him. It's great.
I haven't seen it. That sounds pretty good, though.
I'll send you the link. Who's your third pick?
All right, cool. Third pick is my goalie, and my goalie is Austin Kaut. And Austin Kaut has been taking and stopping a ton of shots. So I assume that will continue this weekend against the New York Lizards. That just seemed like the pick to make there as well.
All right, so we have both finished in second place in consecutive weeks, correct? So you finished in second place last week, or the week before last week when we picked, and then this week I finished in second. Didn't you split it with somebody else?
Yeah, I split it with Dan Abram last week.
I can't believe Abram's won. He won this week, like handily.
Oh, wow!
I mean, it's like beginner's luck, dude. That's just because he's riding the luck train. He's feeling good. He's had too many L's in his life. I'm happy he's getting some W's. I really
am. The universe is starting to balance a little bit for him.
You know, it's everything's coming up, Aber. All right. My picks for this week, I picked Ryan Brown just because I think he had a quiet week in his last game, and I think he's ready to explode. And for Atlanta, they might have to contend with Matt Rambo, who was Charlotte's number one pick in the first round at number three. So I think that actually frees Joey Sankey up a lot. And, you know, Brownie gets into good spaces and finishes balls, man. And that's, you know, he's the best shooter in the world. I'll say it today. I'll say it tomorrow. I'll say it until he proves me wrong. But I'm going to back him until, you know, yeah, he had a bad week last week. But I feel like he bounces back quick. Shooter is going to shoot. So he's my number one. My second guy, I can't deny, you know, the Ratliffian wonder. I can't deny him. He's got to be my pick. Atlanta's number one son, going against Charlotte. I feel like Charlotte is slow to get back in transition, and that is bad news if Ratliff is carrying the ball against you. So my third pick, I echoed you, and I went with Austin Kaut of the Florida Sky Nets. Even though he's facing against New York, and they're going to give up a ton of shots, I still think he's going to make a ton of saves. I don't think Kaut in the last, you know, 2 years has really been shelled to the point where, like, you have to take him out. And I think that's what you want when you pick a goalie for lax draft. I think you need a guy that you know is not going to get pulled. And Kaut's not going to get pulled unless it's, like, 20-4 at halftime. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think Florida settles for – or, New York settles for a lot of shots. And they'll get a lot of openings against Florida, but I think Kaut – shuts the door on them. We should go through all the picks that you can pick. Make sure to go to laxdraft.com and pick your game for as little as $20. You can jump into a 7v7, which is what we are doing with the IL staff and friends. For your first draft choice for week 7, you can pick Peter Baum, midfielder for Ohio against Chesapeake. Mike Bocklet, who helped me win last week, an attackman for Denver against Boston. Ryan Brown, the aforementioned attackman for Charlotte against Atlanta. Sean Evans, who made his outdoor debut for the last like 12 years and dropped a 6 spot, 3 goals and 3 assists last week for Chesapeake against Ohio. You can pick Paul Rabel like Chris. If you just love beards or whatever, he's a good pick against Florida. Or you can pick Jeremy Sievert, midfielder for Denver against Boston. Second draft choices are long poles. You can pick Matt Bocklet, who had a huge week last week. He's playing against Boston this week. CJ Costabile, who might see his role diminish a little bit now that we've seen some faceoff depth be drafted for the Bayhawks against Ohio. Michael Earhart, who just submarine shotted my dreams into the ocean when I picked him last week against Atlanta. And the aforementioned Scott Ratliff, a long pole for the ATL against Charlotte. Your third pick are goalies. You can pick Drew Adams for New York against Florida. Tyler Fiorito as my boy says it on all the calls, meets tweets for Boston against Denver, Austin Kout, Florida against New York, or the sophomore wonder, Jack Kelly, goalie for Denver against Boston. Once again, go to laxdraft.com, sign up for an easy game, quick game, drop $20, put some skin in the game, watch some games all weekend, and have a little fun with your MLL intake. Right now, we are going to end the show as we do every week, and we are going to preview the Twitter game of the week. This week, it's Atlanta versus Charlotte at 6:45 p.m. Chris, what are we watching in this game?
Most important thing to watch in this game, as simple as it might sound, who is going to be there? You know, we've got guys who might be joining these teams. This isn't something we've really been used to the past couple of years. Usually, you know, you make your draft pick and then you wait all season and see the guys later. But, you know, Matt Rambo might suit up. We don't know. Is Jack Adams going to be there? A couple years ago, the Hounds kind of rolled their guys out more slowly, you know, back when they picked up Dylan Donahue. They didn't want to, you know, throw a whole wave of guys. Do they do that this time, or do they roll just one at a time? I mean, can Matt Rambo even play this weekend? Is he banged up? I mean, he just finished playing his college career. So, I mean, that is the number one thing. Who is actually going to be there for these teams?
Yeah, absolutely. We should mention that is going to be on June 3rd, which is Saturday. The broadcast starts at 6:45. Game begins at 7. For me, the thing to watch in this game, you know, I want to see what Gittleman does in net for Atlanta. He made, you know, we didn't talk about this last week. He made two sprawling saves in his last performance against Chesapeake that were otherworldly. Just he comes out of the cage a lot. He's got to run back and make a save, and he did it twice in that game, and it was very impressive. They still lost, but they were, you know, they were in it for most of the game until it got out of hand in the fourth quarter. So I want to watch, you know, what the goaltender does for Atlanta, and maybe they have different defenders suiting up. You know, maybe they have some personnel. So we will see. Maybe Withers plays. Who knows? I think that's definitely the thing to watch. And, you know, we'll update you on that on our various Twitter accounts. We'll kind of keep you guys up to speed there. Matchup-wise, what's the most intriguing matchup for you here in this contest?
I want to see who Graham Hossack is going to be covering on the Charlotte Hounds. I would guess, you know, just assuming Rambo isn't going to be there, I'm going to assume that they put Hossack on Sankey. Just two of, in my opinion, the most exciting people at their respective positions to watch. We'll see, though. And Joey Sankey has had bright spots and then not so bright spots, depending on his matchups this season so far. So, and I guess the same could be said for Hossack, to tell you the truth. So that's my personal matchup. I want to see those guys go back at it another time this year. Are you staying on the same side, saying defense versus attack, or there's somebody else you're watching?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to see what John Haas does. Has a very surprising 19 points, 11 goals, 8 assists so far this season. Tie with Mike Chanichuk. You know, Haas got injured kind of late last season, missed the playoff game. I believe it was a cut on his leg that was a gouge, and it was just too deep for him to play. But yeah, he's having a very surprising season for the Hounds. I want to see what he does for them. But at the same time, like Atlanta, I want to see what they roll out for an attack line. You know, I mean, are we moving guys around constantly? Are we trying to create matchups? I mean, one of the things that maybe we haven't talked about a lot is head coach Dave Huntley, you know, he's grooming a lot of Canadians on that Atlanta squad for the World Championships next summer. So don't be surprised to see more and more and more Canadians in Blaze Black. And it's just be ready for that because that's coming. Another Canadian catch my eye, actually on the other side of the field, Kevin Crowley. What are we going to see from him? 8 goals, 3 assists in 3 games so far this year. I don't know. It usually takes him a game or two to get used to MLL, and then he just explodes. So this could be that game. So those are kind of guys I'm looking at. Let's get to the disrespect of the week. Who gets targeted in this game for each team?
Kind kind of piggybacking on what you're just saying, I see the Charlotte midfield taking a lot of runs at Atlanta's defensive midfielders. And basically, like, you know, there's only one Scott Rat left, so you're going to put him somewhere. And unless they want to, you know, pull up and bring a defender up to cover Mike Vaynerchuk, somebody's going to have an advantage there that I think they're going to really look to capitalize on. So, you know, expect a lot of slides coming from the Atlanta defense. And I think they will look to pick on whichever short stick Atlanta's going to dress, you know, defensively for the game.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think that's kind of my leaning as well. I think, you know, there are guys on Charlotte. I you know, I'm looking at a lot of stats here, and I've seen a lot of games. And, you know, Will Hawes is a guy that has played in every game and has no goals and no assists and 22 ground balls. And I'm not saying he's played bad, but I feel like if you're just going to use him as a guy to run between the boxes and get him off, you know, Atlanta's smart enough to go after that. So I would watch that matchup. I would watch, you know, I don't think Patrick Resch is a bad D-man at all. He's very physical, very strong on the ball. So I don't think they're going to go after him. And I don't know if they're going to go after any of the long poles on Charlotte either. But, you know, the thing, how you beat Charlotte, you know, they give up a lot of goals. One of the ways you beat them is you pull their poles out and you see how far they'll follow you. And one of the things Charlotte has to get better at is playing team defense and kind of supporting guys if they do get beat, you know, on the perimeter and sliding back into place and just locking it in. So I think that's something to watch from Charlotte defensively. And, you know, for Atlanta, like I said, I really just want to see what Gittleman does and who they dress, I think, is a huge part of, you know, what's going to happen in this game defensively for the Blaze. But, you know, with that all being said, any other final words on this game at all?
Yeah, you know who else I want to see? Brendan Fowler. I don't know who he's going to go against, if they're going to, you know, if Withers is going to be there, or I'm just assuming he's not. You know, they'll bring out, you know, Anthony Kelly and Chris May. Maybe they'll have both of them going against Fowler. But the last time we saw Brendan Fowler was that game against Ohio on May 20th when the Hounds were 16 for 20 on the faceoffs. So, and he had two goals as well. So, you know, if he's still riding off of that performance, it could be a long day for Atlanta in that department.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Once again, you can catch the MLL Twitter Game of the Week on Twitter Saturday. This will be this Saturday night, June 3rd. You can start tuning in, watching coverage at 6:45 p.m. And I think that'll do it for the MLL Inside the Cross Week 7 podcast. We made it. We made it through the draft. NCAA is over. There's no more excuses. Go see a game. Go subscribe to LSN. Okay? No enemies here. No shots. Just pay the money. Please. You need to. You need to watch MLL. You can't just rely on this game. We do the preview for that game because we know not everyone's going to pay. And you want to be prepared for whatever you're watching. But drop $8. Just okay? Right? No?
Yeah.
Yes?
I'm going to say yes.
All right.
Check it out. Watch the product. It's a good product. People complain because they love complaining, but MLL is awesome. It's a lot of fun to watch. Yeah, these guys are putting a lot of effort into it. It's not like if I hear one more person say something about, you know, men's league or it's just like a club game. It's like, no, these are people who are treating it like professional athletes, and it's good lacrosse, man. So just watch it and get involved.
Yeah, we should just throw hands at those people next time.
Yeah, right? Feel free.
I mean, if you see Chris and I walking down the street and you come up and yell that, like, you better run.
Right, yeah. If you are like, hey, I know you. You're Kyle Devitt. I think MLL stinks. Just be prepared to catch some hands.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go high. Chris will get you low. And before you know it, ambulance lights. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
All right. That'll do it for us. We will see you. You can find me on Twitter at @vkyledevitt, as well as Instagram. And Chris, where can people find you?
@chrisrosie22.
Thanks a lot. See you guys next week.
X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop, my problem's stainless steel. Go hard, getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make the mother...